Welcome to episode 38 of Gallifrey Public Radio. The episode everyone has been waiting for is finally here, and we get a chance to talk about the name of the doctor. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Witten.
We need somebody who is more intense.
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
Perfect Whovian name.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 38 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we try to speak coherently while scooping up what's left of our exploded brains scattered across a barren landscape. I'm Jay, and this week we are talking about the name of the doctor. With me this week are Keir. How's it going, Keir?
I think my brain is warm.
And Melissa, how are you doing tonight?
I can't even find my brain tonight.
All right. Well, obviously, we're going to be getting into some big spoilers. So if you haven't watched the episode yet, which clearly if you're listening to this, you haven't, because it's kind of hard to listen to stuff when your head's exploded. Go ahead and watch the episode, because we're not going to hold back. We're telling you right now, from here on out, it's spoiler filled.
Well, I mean, spoiler as far as we've seen. We spoil everything up to series 7 episode. What is this specifically?
Episode 13.
13, yeah.
14 if you count the Christmas special, but yeah. Gotcha. There's so many different numbering techniques being used right now, I don't know.
I always number the Christmas special 0, just to keep it organized in iTunes.
Can you do that when it's in the middle of the series?
No, in that instance, I end up putting a B on it.
Okay.
But, okay. Where the hell do we begin with this?
Oh, geez, there's so much.
Let's avoid diving directly into the what if theories, because that could tie up an immense amount of time if we do so. But just taking the episode on merit, on what we were given, I'm gonna tee this up and let you guys run with it for a moment. One of the things from the first point I watched this, one viewing out of probably about 5 or 6 at this point, was that this was what I. Maybe not necessarily the scale, but in terms of the mechanics, this is what I have come to expect from any good Who episode. It answers some questions.
Of any good Who episode.
Any good Who episode, because it follows a couple of key tenets. It answers, it poses as many questions as it answers. It fools the viewer into thinking they know something that they clearly do not know. And while it is exploring new material, it references, if not flat out utilizes, components from the 50-year history that the series has.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think this is when Moffat said that it's not just the 50. It's not just the one episode. Like the 50th will be like a whole year long thing. I think he was referring to this, that like he's going to throw this kind of thing into the episodes themselves.
Mm. A definite possibility, because you can see that there are elements here, obviously, in the way that he explained but did not resolve, just as he said he would, explain but not resolve the Clara mystery, which was, in my estimation, you know what, I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I was surprised, because my first reaction when the whole little opening montage thing happened, I was kind of like, really? I don't know how they're going to wrap this up, how it's going to make sense now. But I was actually really pleased with it. I'm like, it could have been a lot better, maybe, but I don't know how. I think it was good, given what we had.
Well, sure. I mean, the idea of giving it the connection that, and this is Moffat's trademark, when he puts down and actually pens an episode, he loves using the bookend technique, where he'll give you the finale in the first 45 seconds, and it makes no sense. You spend the rest of the episode trying to make sense of what you had just seen before the opening credits even rolled, and then he hands it to you again near the close of the episode with all the knowledge that you've now amassed. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea of using the old clips and doing the digital overlay, while it was a little clunky at times, and it's, you're working with the best of the material you've got, but those references were great.
Oh, yeah.
Third Doctor looking in Bessie's rearview mirror and seeing her on the roadside and all these great moments. I mean, this is just that was very poignant. I'll bring this up later, but that whole idea of her interspersal across the timeline left me feeling like I wanted something very particular from this episode that I didn't get, and I'll broach that later. But I did think that this explanation was acceptable, you know. Not what I had in mind, and I think, you know, Steve-O called it when he said, you know, I've been putting these things out there, nobody's guessed it yet, nobody's even on the right path. Well, yeah, he's right. I don't remember coming across any blog or forum posting where anybody said, you know, that she had done something of this caliber.
Yeah, no, I think the closest one I heard was the theory that Rose had, like, where she had survived and become the Emperor Dalek, and that Rose scattered her across time herself. And that's the closest theory that I actually heard, and that's the one that I wrote off like, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, this was pretty well executed in that regard. Other things I really appreciate, although I'm going to put a little asterisk and hang this on here. In the clips that we had seen, some of the things that we had been handed, and one of the ones that got repeated at beginning and end of episode was the instance, you know, right from the opening moments where in the engineering room or on the repair floor, she appears to Hartnell, First Doctor, and advises her to take a different TARDIS off the floor. She knows what he's up to.
Mm-hmm.
And she points him towards a different TARDIS. That, from a continuity standpoint, bugged me a little bit.
It doesn't really fit, but I don't know.
Well, the way that the continuity thing could be resolved would be if you think of Clara as working for the TARDIS in order to get the Doctor on the path that he needs to be. You know what I mean? Because she says that, like, you know, the TARDIS chose him, is from her point of view, but then we've clearly seen Clara do it. Like, you know, if you think of them as kind of colluding, she's working with the TARDIS. Right. It makes sense.
That's a possibility, because we don't know the backstory on that particular iteration of Clara, which, by the way, and I'm going to give credit to Dr. Longscarp on this one. He came up with this one early this morning, and I've been rattling it around in my brain all day, was the fact that since Clara's there, and she's obviously in that scope, she's Gallifreyan, and she is within the Time Lords Academy, so to speak, you know, within their structure and their facilities. So she has some degree of clearance. She could very well potentially be, that instance could very well potentially be a candidate for a Clara Time Lady.
Wow.
Which I had to step back from the monitor after I read that and thought, well, you know, it could have just been, you know, a little glitch in the, you know, a little bump in the script where they threw that in, you know, to be cute or clever and didn't really think about the implications. But they don't often miss a beat like that.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to write it off as just, you know, he wanted to have some kind of interaction with a previous Doctor, and that, you know, that would make the most sense, like, at the very beginning kind of thing. And it's just, I don't know. I'll be interested to see how it plays out, if at all. You know, if we don't hear anything about it, like, ever again, then, you know, we'll know that it was just kind of one of those things. And
there's a plot hole, yeah.
And then it's a plot. They could use it for anything. Clara could be the master in the end, and you could be like, well, it works out. She was a Time Lady in this one incarnation. Like, you know?
Yeah. She could have been the Ronnie. Who knows?
Yeah.
Except they're never going back to the Ronnie.
That's true. Yeah, he did admit he's never going back to the Ronnie. I don't know. If there were, you know, again, more dark material from Smith, you know, watching that breakdown when he realizes, you know, the implications of the fact that he hears the name, you know, the mention of the name Trenzalore, and how that absolutely shatters him within seconds.
I've got to say, Matt Smith in this episode was just amazing. I mean, his performance was just spot on and terrific.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I think that is, again, it's the matter of, you know, you've got to give him the right material and he will step up. You know, all of the things looking back, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch, you know, 6 throughout, and I'm going to watch the first half of 7 and things, and just the caliber of what he had been handed, and look back at my notes and all the things that I was, you know, jumping up on soapboxes about going anti-Smith. But I think that really had a lot to do with the fact that he was getting handed cheese balls, you know, and he couldn't make a gourmet meal out of it. So,
yeah. He's definitely, in the last two episodes, he's really made me think this guy is awesome. Mm. I mean, I've gotten to the point, like, it was probably like late in series 5 where I was finally accepting him as the Doctor, but now he's really making a name for himself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Although you've seen the pictures of him with the short hairdo and whatnot. Did you realize he had that scar across his forehead?
No, not until I saw that. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
Pretty weird.
It's not a short haircut. He's pretty much shaved.
Well, it's a buzz cut.
It's a buzz cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was like, that doesn't look like the Doctor at all. Like, I can tell it's Matt Smith, but I was like, wow, that's drastically different.
So, other things walking through this episode. I mean, Vastra, Jenny, Strax, and having them involved to a greater capacity here and getting some really interesting things out of them. I was a little weird about the dream seance conference call thing. I thought that was maybe the only weak point of the episode.
It was a plot device, but whatever.
Yeah, it was cute.
I liked it. You know, the plot device.
Yeah, they had some fun with it. You know, River was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
There's a video, kind of a behind the scenes thing, where Neve McIntyre and Alex Kingston are talking about where River slaps Vastra. Uh-huh. And Neve McIntyre was saying, you know, in the script it says, you know, River smacks Vastra, and then in brackets it said, good luck, Neve, and she said, I couldn't figure out what he meant by that. And then it cuts to Alex Kingston. She's like, oh, I did. I smacked her, and I feel so bad about it.
No. I remember that, you know, we've come across that in a lot of stage work. You know, you'll choreograph stage fights and things like that. But when it comes to a single slap, the only way to really convey it is to rear off and actually let it happen. You're going to get the most accurate sound. You're going to get the most accurate physical reaction from both sides, and you're going to get the most accurate facial reaction from the recipient.
Yeah.
There's just no way to convey that without actually taking the hit. So
I did the Scottish play, and there was a part where one of the girls had to slap one of the other girls, and we, like, none of the people that were not in the scene were always like, oh my god, it looks real every single time. Like, the sound effect went off at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That I would worry about it on film because of the fact that you're going to end up having to do multiple takes from multiple angles. So maybe in those instances, only one shot actually connects. But on stage, it's, you know, one take, one shot, one audience. Might as well sell it. So, yeah, we went a little more. We committed to it a little farther. But regarding the whole dream call and so forth, I will admit that I got angry to the point of yelling at my television when Jenny was dying. That was rough.
That was. I mean, the way that she kept apologizing and she's like, I think I've been murdered. And you're just like, oh my god, no. I was completely sold on the fact that she was dying at that point.
Yeah, I got choked up. I didn't get angry. I was like,
yeah.
No, I was getting angry at the fact. Well, angry at the fact that they were letting it happen, and angry at the fact that Vastra wasn't paying attention to her.
Yeah,
that's your wife. And you know, when she's in trouble and she's obviously, you know, distressed, you know, just, you know, pay her a little bit of lip service, please, just for a minute. But she died twice. We lost her twice.
Yeah,
because she disappeared from existence the second time around.
Yeah, but I mean, the second time you knew, it's like, okay, she'll be back as soon as they fix all of this. That wasn't such a, oh my god, they killed her again kind of thing.
I don't know. You know, at that point,
I mean, the stakes felt very low. Like once after they killed her the first time, it was like whatever.
I don't know. Right? I sort of took it as I ended up getting so sort of emotionally tossed around at that point in the episode when things were starting to break down. You didn't really know which timelines, which elements were going to be restored and which ones were going to be considered lost, because we've lost timelines before.
Yeah,
you know, we've lost characters before.
Yeah, but I don't know. It seemed like that wasn't the big focus of the episode, and so it didn't seem like, I was like, there's not enough gravity behind this for it to stick. You know, there wasn't a build up. There wasn't like when she died at the beginning, that I could have seen that sticking. Like there was enough build up behind it. There was enough gravity. In this one, it was just like, oh look, she vanished because time's getting rewritten, and she'll be back as soon as they fix it. It wasn't something I was worried about.
Yeah, I did love seeing Strax revert to his military yes. form, though. And finally, there's your opportunity to see that that he can still that Starkey can still pull off the military. Regimental Centauran as well.
Yeah.
You know, all the comedic effect had been cast aside, and he was, you know, out for blood at that point. So, if we ever get that again, if we do get, you know, the glorious Centauran army at any point in the future again, you know, I have no qualms in considering that Strax can put the comedy relief aside.
Mm.
So.
Yeah. And I love the fact, like, Moffat had said, that this was such a dark episode, and there was so much talk of death and everything like that. He was like, "I know I've got to put some comedy in here. You know, I've got to make it funny so that people aren't, you know, horribly depressed." And I think that he did a decent job. I mean, we got an email from Shooter, you know, one of our listeners that gives us a lot of feedback, thankfully, and he was saying that he felt that. There could have been more with Strax, but I felt like it was a good amount because it didn't overshadow the fact that there was such serious things going on. It helped you from, you know, wanting to open a vein halfway through, but you know, it didn't take away from the seriousness.
True. Yeah. The whole theme of death in this episode was played with from so many angles that I think that's what has a lot of us sort of emotionally and mentally reeling from this, because we were dealing not only with the death of characters, we were dealing with the ability for the Doctor, once he is suddenly given the full breadth and scope and knowledge of his entire timeline and is able to see through to his death and is able to know these things and is able to know why it is that he's had to avoid Translor all along and that aspect of it. And then we've got River, who we know is gone but preserved, yet hasn't said goodbye, and that's almost like a little death in and of itself. There's so many permutations and plays on that idea of death and loss that I think, me personally, that's why I left. I had to walk away from it feeling so drained every time I've gone back to rewatch it so far.
Yeah, I mean this was such a great episode all in all. I mean I've gone back and watched it probably four times already, and I'll watch it more again. But yeah, I mean the whole thing, it this whole series kind of felt like a letdown. The second, you know, series 7B, it didn't feel like it was what it should have been. And then I got to this episode and it's like, okay, I forgive you.
Well, this leads me to believe that as difficult as it may have been for Moffat, he needs to have, if he's going to be a true showrunner for this, he has to do similarly to what he ended up doing in 6 and having far more final say and creative input and insight over the scripts that end up getting put to production. Because it just seemed like when he had more control, we were getting more of what we wanted. Mm-hmm. And I know there have been some bloggers out there that have said, oh no, you people are all just finding things to bitch about, and 7B was a great series segment, and these episodes are fantastic, and you're just finding things to rail against, and the public is wrong. Well, the public is who you're writing these episodes for. The public is what this show is on the air for. So if you're in that much of a minority trying to defend episodes where the viewership is down, where the public response is down, where the internet is lighting up with criticisms and complaints and just general grievances and unrest, that tells you something. So yeah, you might have really enjoyed, you know, Akaten. You might have really enjoyed Crimson Horror. You might have, you know, really enjoyed Hyde or Cold War or what have you, but a lot of people didn't. Mm-hmm. Because they were missing aspects of what we really want from these episodes, especially when you've got such, you know, the groundwork for such major stuff going on. And Moffat, in this episode, proves that. Because he's hitting all the points that we want. And you don't have to give us all of it. It doesn't have to be a finale caliber episode all the time. But give us some of those components that keep us engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, Moffat really does need to have a stronger hand on all of this and, you know, say, this is the story we're going with. You know, include this, put this in here, whatever. And, you know, instead of just writing two episodes and saying, okay, people, scatter some of this in there if you get the chance.
Right, right. Or filming little codas to stick in at the end of episodes to just remind the public that they are paying attention.
Yeah.
Both of your takes on the on dancing around the actual exposure of the Doctor's name.
That
I was fine with it.
Yeah, that was brilliant. I mean, there was a moment where I was like, his name is Please, really?
Please.
And, you know, but I thought it was great, and I think the fact that you know, they, River was the one to say his name, so we didn't get it, right. And then, you know, at the very end, when, you know, we actually get the other tie-in to his name, when, you know, he says, you know, you didn't do it in the name of the Doctor, and I was like, mm-hmm. That was brilliant. I loved that.
That's one of the biggest credits that I will give to Moffat on this one, is the fact that the idea of the Doctor as a role, as an identity, as a name, as a promise, that is now growing. That has been the replacement for the Doctor Who question that Dorian was giving us in 6. Now we have to actually really look very closely at the idea of the capital T, capital D, the Doctor.
Yeah.
And all of that entails. Because obviously, well, now we've got another player on the field. Yeah. Are we ready for this?
Yeah. John freaking Hurt. I mean, that was brilliant.
Oh my god.
I mean, as soon as that popped up on the screen, you heard every Whovian's head just explode.
I paused the DVR. I just kind of stared blankly for a moment. I mean, I was watching this at like 2 in the morning. I couldn't process. My jaw was just kind of doing that up and down thing without words coming out.
Yeah.
And I turned over to Julian. I'm like, I don't, holy shit. And I think she said something to the effect of, well, what does this mean? And I don't know. That's what's great about it.
And I think that's what it is. It's like something happened and no one understood how to take it. Yeah. It was just, I mean, it's such an unprecedented thing that there's no response to this. I don't know how to process this. Yeah.
Well, it's because they introduced it the way that they would a new regen. Like, this is the way that 9 turned into 10, like, introducing David Moffat as the Doctor. I mean, David Tennant.
Well,
Freudian slip.
I don't... They didn't... they didn't give intentionally. They did not give enough clarification as to exactly what point, past, present, future, side stream, parallel universe, bubble universe, where this fits in.
All right, let's take this one at a time. I think we should now just, like, let's talk about all the possible theories of who this could be. So, like,
a few.
Yeah. So what do you guys think?
I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Jay. They sort of run as far as chronologically. You've got some people that are saying that he could potentially have been pre-first,
or not even pre. Well, yeah, pre-first, but like, it's something my wife said when we were watching it. She was like, "So is he like a young William Hartnell? You know, is this when he was, you know, growing up on Gallifrey, kind of doctor? You know."
Right.
And then we've got people saying that it's somewhere interspersed throughout his timeline, like in between regenerations or something.
Right. Well, we never saw 8 regenerate, right? So this could be. People are saying that John Hurt is the one who did all the stuff in the Time War.
Yeah, he's the older Paul McGann.
Yeah, that's been going around because of the fact that the idea that there have been all the references, not only within scripts, but a lot of the extended material that refer to all of the atrocities, the crimes, if you want to call it that, that he had committed in order to do the deed of sealing the time lock and thus, you know, protecting the universe as we know it, but. He had descended into this bad point and had been performing all of these, you know, again, atrocities that could have been a matter of an actual split. So that similarly to the idea of having, you know, the only way to purge yourself is to tear away all the things that make you impure. He would be the amalgam of all of those impurities. So sort of the anti-doctor, so to speak. I get that, but I think that would require a lot of explanation for
Saying that he's the Valyard, however you pronounce it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, no, good, because... As described back in Trial of the Time Lord, you're going back to Sixth Doctor, the Valyard is described as residing between the 12th and 13th regenerations.
Right, but he's also, right what you just said, according to the Master, an amalgamation of the darker side of the Doctor's nature.
Right. What I'm thinking is that similarly to what the Master had gone through, you know, you've got this this brilliant, sentient being that has lived for not only centuries but millennia and has had the ability over that time, because of the ability to time travel, has seen the birth and death of universes and civilizations rise and fall and all of these things. And there's a certain degree of power that goes along with that. And, you know, you take the adage of absolute power corrupting absolutely. When it, similarly to just what the Master had gone through when he reached the end of his cycle and started descending into madness because he was so consumed with trying to preserve himself, that you end up with, you know, with what we know as this evil mastermind, so to speak. What's to say that our Doctor doesn't see that same thing start to happen as he reaches, you know, issue number 13? But has some sort of an ability to break himself apart from that, you know, or be able to split himself from that using another wibbly wobbly timey wimey technique that we have yet to write.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, we've got, you know, it's pre First Doctor, you know, it's 8, you know, towards the end before he regenerates. It's the Valyard. It's, you know, something beyond what we've seen so far, you know, and mm-hmm. You know, it's the 42nd Doctor figuring out why he hasn't run out of regenerations yet. You know, we don't know. Right. That's the brilliant thing, is we get nothing in this, you know, except for the, you know, honestly, it was a bad graphic, but it, I mean, it worked brilliantly. It was effective as all hell.
Mm-hmm. The idea of that promise, the promise kept and the promise broken, I think is going to be what's really dissected, not only in the 50th, but I think that's what's going to propel us into season 8. Because that's that now, we're now starting to get, with Ninth, we had the angry doctor dealing with the repercussions of everything that he had done and had to do, which this may be connected to. We don't know. Yeah. We have Tenth, who was going through his renaissance and his renewed, love for everything around him and this very kind of a Zen, or this. This yin and yang going between the Zen of his love of the universe and then his darkness when he thinks he's alone in that universe. Now we have 11, who has all of this prior knowledge and could go in any direction he wanted with it. He could decide to go recluse, as we saw when he's, in Victorian England. He could decide to just be everybody's buddy. And just, grab everyone in a big, Gallifreyan bear hug and so on. Or it could be something very different where he has to find his balance, which is what I think they're doing at the moment. But this promise idea says to me that now we get to a little more of an understanding of the role he has always played throughout. Or that he had made this agreement with himself of this identity to be, and will that'll give us a clearer indication of where that promise has been tested, or in the instance of John Hurt and whoever the hell he really is, the instance where that promise had to break.
Mm-hmm. there's so much to get from this. That we want to get that we can't. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, at this point, I'm just ready to bask in the glory that was the finale and wait the excruciating 6 months.
I think you'll still do a fair amount of theorizing.
Oh yeah, undoubtedly.
Theorizing with us.
Right.
Yeah, but this was just such a great episode and such a great way to wrap everything up and lead into the 50th that I don't feel like I need to. I feel like, he's got this under control. It's going to be awesome when we get to the 50th. I don't need to try and figure out what it is to set my expectations.
Right.
Well, now that you brought it up, let's talk about the 50th. I think that this episode was leading into it. I think we're going to have some kind of like the Three Doctors situation, but with maybe 10, 11 and John Hurt. Or however you want to know. But,
possibly. Now I've got to wonder why, of any other regens, why use the 10th for this? Why have Tenet there, if this is the backdrop or the canvas that they've set out for what we could potentially be dealing with, where's the connection?
Yeah, well, I mean, he went into his own timeline.
Right.
The simple fact is it could be something like, this could be on the scale of we blew up Vulcan in the first movie kind of reboot thing. Yeah. We don't know where he's going to go with this. It could be just a simple, mechanic to, get him teamed up with his previous version, or it could be something far beyond that. We don't have enough information to tell yet, and I think it's going to lead to good things. I mean, you've had a show on for 50 years. You need something, cataclysmic like this to keep it fresh and keep things interesting. So I'm hoping it turns out to be a much bigger deal than just, this is how we teamed up with David Tennant, and now we're back to normal at the beginning of Series 8.
Right. Well, here's what I got to wonder. Are we considering the fact that when Clara jumped in, spread herself across the time stream to counter almost point for point all of the instances where the Great Intelligence is attempting to destroy the Doctor along the way, as we have been led to believe that he has done all along, Because there have been, you know, both in on-screen and in referenced instances where the Great Intelligence has been attempting to take out the Doctor. You know, was this actually time just playing out the way it is? You know, all of these things have happened. But so does that mean that Series 8 is going to be just a bunch of episodes where we get to see, we get to bump into a Clara who is helping us through an instance of the Great Intelligence as the big bad? No. Or
I think there was a central Clara who was saved, and it's still going to be her who travels with the Doctor. Whether they meet other incarnations of her or something is something else. But he saved her, basically, right? Because they say, like, Dr. Simeon died when he went into the time screen. Why didn't she die? And the Doctor says, because she has me. Like, so they said she didn't die.
Right. That iteration somehow persisted, and somehow they reconnected. You know, of all the infinite possibilities of where that consciousness could have landed or fallen out of the stream, it just happened to be the one, you know, where we're carrying it through. Which I'm assuming that as the, you know, in this that desolate location where they come across, you know, Hurt's character, that they're both cognizant of one another, they're both in sync as far as their time streams, they picked up right where they leapt in, sort of a thing. So we get to follow her naturally. God, how do you back up from this and start having normal episodes again? That's my question.
Oh, it's going to be rough. It really is.
I think that, I mean, honestly, I think they are going to be able to have the 50th, and it's going to be crazy, and it's going to change everything. But don't be surprised if the beginning of the next series is just like Monster of the Week episodes.
Just to let our brains settle a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we've been put you through enough, here's a break, just...
Hey.
Take a breath, and then we'll start throwing the mind bendy at you again.
See, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking the Christmas episode will be. That'll be our little hiatus, because you know, who knows how long that gap is going to be from December to, you know, to question mark before the, you know. So maybe 50th will be just as confusing and maddening and wonderful and exhausting and angering and everything as this was, but the somehow in the way that plays through, we are given the opportunity to return to some sort of a patterned normalcy that we just need time to accept, and the Christmas episode will give us a nice little...
It would be awesome if they made David Tennant the star of the Christmas episode. What if it was like a 10th Doctor episode, like a lost Christmas?
Oh boy, that would be pretty funny. Yeah, I don't know about that. They have to give Smith time for his hair to grow back out. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, he said that he's supposed to be filming the Christmas special this summer. So
yeah. With a hat on, apparently.
Well, he did this past year. Why not?
Yeah. Or a wig.
I don't know. Can you wig that head and really sell it? That's a fascinating mop.
So one of my friends I was talking to about this episode, we were going back and forth about it, and he said, you know, I'm not going to be happy unless the 50th anniversary ends with, you know, John Hurt's Doctor having a, you know, an unshelled Dalek burst from his chest.
Okay, that's something.
Yeah, it'd be funny.
Yeah. I'm gonna use the takeaway from this to be able to go back, since we know that we're going to be doing rewatches to discuss the series in general. I think it's definitely going to cast a slightly different filter on the rewatches of some of the episodes that we didn't particularly care for, both in 7A and 7B. You know, ever since Silent of the Daleks, for that matter. So pretty much throughout the whole Clara arc. I think I'm going to be able to smooth the edges on some of the things that we kind of, well, that we hacked and slashed at a bit, simply because, I'm understanding that Moffat's really, as a showrunner, he's also treating this as a farm team. Mm-hmm. He needs to find his go-to writers. And there's times when he'll go back and he'll tap into a writer who hasn't written an episode for 3 or 4 seasons or 2 or 3 seasons. Or he'll utilize somebody who's been writing for him on another program or another series and see how they do on the sci-fi format. So it's a matter of experimentation. They're not always going to go well, but we as viewers need to recognize the fact that if the show is going to survive for another 10, 25, 50 years, you need to keep cultivating. So there are going to be some growing pains in this, and it really is, in essence, kind of like that, because we're now dealing with a new showrunner who's had an opportunity to transition out a companion from underneath an existing doctor, which he didn't do at the outset. He had new doctor, new companions, new TARDIS, new setting, new
Yeah, fresh show from the ground up, yeah.
Right, so that gave him a lot of elbow room. And he laid some groundwork for himself with season 6, and we started getting some sort of expectations and a baseline in mind. And now with a transition like that, he had to do something unusual with it. And damned if he didn't do that.
Yeah.
My one last thing, and then I'm going to shut up, is that, and I've been thinking about this a lot, Moffat's legacy is not Smith. If he decides at the end of 8 that he's going to walk away and hand the reins to someone else, whether or not Smith persists and he decides to go on with another person at the helm, or whether Smith leaves before Moffat does, or whatever, that those two are not necessarily latched at the hip. You know, one success does not depend on the other. In my estimation, I think Moffat's legacy is River Song. That is,
yeah,
the most beautiful extended storyline I've seen done in Who in a long, long time, if ever.
Yeah, I think the story that they put into this episode, the fact that we got River after the library, like, I kept seeing it pop up everywhere on the internet that this was going to be a post-library River, and I was like, no, I don't buy it. I don't see how that's going to happen. It just, I just kept saying, no, somebody's wrong. I didn't realize how amazingly awesome it was going to be when they did it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that you had a chance to say, okay, here's the doctor, here's River. They both have had every experience together that, you know, that you've witnessed. Mm-hmm. And this is how it plays out.
Yeah. Is there any way that we could possibly have her appear again and have it not feel like a complete anticlimactic out of sequence letdown?
She did leave it open.
It's
the whole mental link with Clara, right?
Yeah. They left it vague enough to where if they did put her in, it would take some fancy writing, but they could do it. But at the same time, if this was the end, if this is where River goes out, I think it was brilliant.
Yeah,
I know I kept saying that I wanted to see the date that they go on. I want to see him giving her the screwdriver. I never expected this. If this is how it ends, I'm good with it. I think this was a great way to end her story.
Honestly, I felt like this episode, a lot of it was, it's like fan service, pure and simple. So with them showing the previous Doctor incarnations, which I loved, and then with all the River stuff, which I love because you guys know I love River Song, but as I've said before, like, we've seen her whole story beginning to end. This one, like, this is like an epilogue, and then we find out that she's just an echo, which, mm-hmm. What does that even mean? Because I thought it was depressing enough that she ended up, like, saved to a computer, like, with these people that she went on her expedition with, like, these are the people she stuck with for all eternity, and then it turns out it's not even that. She needs to, like, make her peace with the Doctor. So she has to say goodbye to him. Like, she needs the finality of that. But then she's like, oh, say goodbye like it's not final. Like, I'll see you again. Like,
right. Well, that's just indicative of their relationship. The idea of them ever having a first or a last of anything is irrelevant. Because she's timeless now, and he's cyclical. So between the two of them, and it's what makes it kind of tragically beautiful, is that they both know that the loss is always going to be there, but they never come around to it. They never have that final moment where they have to actually part, but they know that the parting is ever present. And that's tragic.
So yeah. Do you think this was that parting?
I think insofar as something that's presented for the viewer to take away in that regard, yeah, I think so. Because it's just how appropriate is the fact that he's, you know, they are at some indeterminate point in terms of their his knowledge of her, okay, or his experiences with her. There could have been ones that chronologically happened after in his time or what have you. But he is completely aware. At that point, he's aware of everything. I mean, he's been given the foresight and hindsight at this point, so he's seeing everything and knows that she's there. God knows that she's been there through that entire thing and has been failing to acknowledge her because of the pain that would cause for both of them. I mean, God, just everything at this point, with River just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Damn you.
I think that that's such a great thing, though, that, you know, every time he brings his character in, it's like, we've seen her. We've seen her die. We've seen her leave. We've seen her heartbroken. We've seen her orphaned. We've seen all of this stuff. And yet he's still able to bring her back and make it, you know, a new, fresh experience every time. And, you know, you never sit there and be like, oh, here's River again. How's he going to make me cry this time? You know, it's a compelling story every time we see it, and we get so wrapped up in it every time. And I can't think of a single time where I've seen a story like that where it's you do almost the same thing with just slight variances, and it never gets old.
Yeah. Which is why, this has to be, as far as all the things that he's thrown at the show, and all of the classic references that he's decided to revive or even just give lip service to, all of his contributions, this has got to be the one that I think is the most complex and just from a viewer standpoint, the most interesting to really watch play out because it's so unusual and so asynchronous. You know, no pun really intended. I mean, it just is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the whole story with River, if you go through and follow it, regardless of how you know, which order you watched it or anything like that, is just, it's such a great story. And I mean, there were times in the middle where it kind of seemed gimmicky, like, oh yeah, they're bringing in River so she can be the, you know, the plot device for this reason or whatever. But if you take it apart and actually look at the reasoning behind it, the story that follows it, you know, and not try and place it as a writing device or something. I mean, it's solid every time. She's not thrown in there, you know, just willy nilly. It's if she's there, there's a reason for it, and it's compelling.
Yeah, great interaction between her and Clara too in this episode.
Oh yeah, the reveal that she actually was the doctor's wife. Yeah, it's like they wouldn't bury my wife here. You're what?
Well, it made up for him saying she was his ex before.
Yeah.
Instead of like an ex, an ex.
That was another pillow thrown at the television moment. I have to admit, that pissed me off a bit. But yeah, I think, I honestly don't know if we'll end up seeing Kingston again. I think at this point, it may just be difficult to accept because this was, you know, as Shooter even wrote in, you know, this was a bit of closure, atypical, but then again, nothing is typical when it comes to the two of their paths crossing. But this is the tying up of that loose end. of her getting the acknowledgement that at the end all be all that she truly did matter and continues to matter to him to a great degree, even though we were worried that we were losing sight of that mm-hmm. over the course of this series. You know, they weren't mentioning her and she was never being referenced or given any sort of credit for anything. I'm like, you guys still remember that he's married to this woman who's really kick ass and awesome and hello? Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I mean, all in all, I think this was I can't think of a better way to end the series. Yeah, especially a series that was so lackluster throughout. Mm-hmm. You know, to get a finale this awesome was just it was great, and I look back on it now and I think, wow, this it was a fun ride. It was great getting here. I know there were times where I was like, man, this episode sucked. I don't like this one, and this one could have been better. But once you finish it off with this one, this is the chaser that makes everything else good.
Yeah, call this episode Doctor Who: Redemption.
Yeah. And you guys know I watched it kind of late in the week, so mm-hmm. people were, like, a lot of people were tweeting me and messaging me on Facebook and like, texting
no,
me, like,
don't
oh my god.
It.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I knew that, like, so I was going into it, like, okay, there's no way this is going to redeem this whole season. And I watched it, and I was like, I think it did. I think it redeemed the whole season.
Yeah, and I had the opposite problem where I actually got a copy of it early, slightly early. I got it Saturday, earlier on in the day, and I sat down and I watched it, and I'm screaming and yelling and having a good old time, and then I get done and I'm like, I gotta go talk to somebody about this, but America won't watch this for another 4 hours. Dang it!
Mm-hmm.
And I had to keep my mouth shut. It sucked.
Well, it's... If anything, this is just going to give me some reassurance that we're on okay ground, that we can take our bumps and bruises, but I think we're gonna get through this all right.
Yeah, it's still Doctor Who. It's still an amazing show, regardless of the roller coaster we go through.
Yep.
So now, what do you guys think is going to be the plot of the next season coming up, like going into it now that we know all this stuff?
I've got so much processing power focused on the whole John Hurt thing. I can't even ask me about the Christmas special, and I'm still kind of nothing beyond November 23rd at this point, please.
I honestly think that one of the things that'll end up coming out of the 50th is the fact that he's going to have to start wrestling with some of his demons of the past. They're going to use the 50th as an opportunity to open some doorways or reopen some things from potentially even from classic that have been sort of sealed off or not ever seen through. So it's going to, because this episode was as strong as it was, because the amount of attention that will be paid in the 50th will be as high as it is, depending on how much they're able to cram into that, they can use that as a primer for people who are unfamiliar with a lot of the long scope of Whovian history, and give them just enough so that if he wants to start going back and reaching into the Valyard or what have you, he'll have more elbow room to do so. So we could have an entire series, or at least a good portion of the series, that brings back some old conflicts, not necessarily villains, not necessarily locations or things like that, but conflicts, things left on the table that still have to be resolved, or that would be interesting to see them finally resolved. And I can't really give it any more detail than that, but it's kind of what my brain would like to see.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's always been a trying to find a balance of, how much of the old material can we include and not lose the people who have never seen it. And I think that this is such a great opportunity to do that. I mean, this season, the 50th anniversary, all of this is such a great publicity thing of, like, there's more to this. There's a lot of stuff behind it, and they're doing it in a way that's actually making people ask questions and get excited about finding out the old stuff. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that this is the the thing that breaks it and the thing that says, okay, we can start introducing more of the classic elements and, you know, go revisit a lot more of the old villains or the old storylines or whatever. You know, what happened to the, you know, the medieval time, period people that, you know, dealt with the first Santarin that we encountered. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. follow, you know, just however they do it, just bring a lot of that stuff back. And this, I mean, this is a great gateway drug.
Yeah, it's well put. We'll see. I, you know, we don't know necessarily that we've had, we'll have a confirmation as to whether or not this is going to be an entire season for either our Doctor or Companion. You know, we know they'll be in it. We don't know whether they will see it all the way through. You know, things change midstream, so there could be a bump there. We could have an ancillary companion, a secondary companion added, mm-hmm. which would be kind of interesting.
Do we have casting confirmation that... I know Matt Smith is going to be in the next season. I think I heard that Jenna Louise Coleman is.
Yeah. Yeah, they've both gotten their confirmations.
Yeah, that's all we've gotten so far. Yeah, and that's all we really need at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now, do you think it's going to be this version of Clara? Or my friend Sean Michael on Facebook was saying, what if now she remembers all the incarnations of herself?
I don't think she can ever have memory of all of her incarnations. She may, you know, have seen just as much as we saw. You know, she gets these visions, or there's while she was in the stream, she had that cognizance. But I think it would be far cleaner to give her, well, it'd be cleanest if she had no recollection whatsoever. It'd be kind of clunky from everyone else's perspective because we know more than she knows. But even if she had the knowledge of the fact that there have been other of her out there, if she never overlaps with them, I think that at least allows us to continue forward with episode by episode.
Mm-hmm.
Gives her a little power because, yeah. You know, now she knows that, you know, she's got the, you know, the chutzpah of saying, well, you know, I saved you a couple thousand times through history.
Yeah. I don't know. I personally...
I mean, that's another... Wait, now that you said that, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but did she really even save him? Like... She's always shown failing in all these montages.
Well, that was one of the reasons why I had actually thought at some point that this could have very well been a two-part finale.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of things that they kind of rushed through. This was an extremely fast-paced episode as far as all the things that I really wanted to have more breathing room. Mm-hmm. They could have dropped one of the duds that they had going on this season and made this a two-part finale, so the whole first half is just seeing everything that's going wrong once the Great Intelligence has scattered itself across the Doctor's time stream and starts, you know, mucking up all of these singular moments that are pivotal, and end up having the repercussions on, you know, on the world or on the universe as we know it. And then our second half is her leaping in, and we get to see a few, doesn't have to be many, but just a few item by item instances where her involvement sets the path straight again. And that would have been enough for me to say, okay, you know, her plan succeeded, you know, her sacrifice was not in vain, and that, you know, this explains why the Great Intelligence, who was supposed to be our predominant villain in this episode, really had more of a risk. You know, it didn't even seem like we had that much of a genuine concern about him because he was there for a bit. He expounded some really interesting things about the Doctor's past, present, and future, jumped into the time stream, and we were told things went bad. But we didn't really get to see. I mean, this was a massive entity that had been around longer than the universe and had wanted to take the Doctor out because it saw him as the predominant threat to its ever being able to take physical form and rule the way it wanted to. Now it had an opportunity to take the Doctor out. It's getting what it wanted. I wanted to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, they really should have gone with that, but, you know, like you said, it would have had to have been a two-parter. There's no way to cram that in here as well.
Or they could have really made it through the whole season and had the Great Intelligence as like an overarching villain.
Yeah, it could have been the puppet master behind the scenes of everything that we've had so far, which would have been really interesting too. But, I mean, not to take anything away from what we were given, I would have loved to see that just expanded a bit. So that Clara's sacrifice was more, not justified, but I don't know, visualized, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think that all in all, I can't complain about this. I mean, there's so many things that could have been different, that could have been changed a little bit, that could have been improved this way or whatever. But my
only complaint was that I wanted more. Sorry.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, I think it was just great. I can't stop saying that. It was just awesome.
This is going to be one of those ones that you can look back on 20 years from now and say, all right, when you're putting together your must watch and your top 10 that you need, this one's going to be in there. Because it takes the show on a left turn, and we needed it. The show needed that kind of a kick in the ass to say, you know what, you think you're starting to understand? You think this is just kind of a monster of the week thing? Well, no. We got a lot of backstory, and we're not afraid to use it.
So do we want to go into the news?
Well, yeah, the news at this point is really kind of by the way.
Yeah.
You know, as we were concerned about last week, the fact that the knowledge of the early DVD sets that had gotten out there that had given some U.S. viewers the finale well before broadcast date, and a massive online campaign was put out there to beg and plead that people keep shtum about it. And for the most part, with very few exceptions, they did so.
Yeah, so, and I actually love the fact that, I mean, people were actively, shutting this stuff down. I mean, there were websites that, shut down their comments section so that people wouldn't be tempted to put it in there. And like, I've never seen a fandom that was so adamant about, keeping things spoiler free.
Yeah. Well, take it back to what one of the show's basic appeals is. We've got a character who has all of this history, and we've learned so many things about him, but for everything that we learn, we crop up two more questions, and it's the mystery about him. It's the fact that we never will completely understand everything about him that makes us gravitate towards him. So that being said, and it goes along with the whole discussion of the whole idea, will the name be revealed and all the hubbub that caused? This is the same premise. People want, they'll theorize all day long, but at the end of it all, when the episode starts to air, when the last commercial goes to black and the episode starts and people get all excited and they hunker down onto their couch, they are waiting for a mystery. Plain and simple. Mm-hmm. They've got their theories. They may think they know what's going to happen, and sometimes they might even be right, but they're living for the mystery.
Yeah.
If you take that away, it ruins a vast majority of the magic of the show.
Yeah, and that's something I've noticed that Moffat is really good at. I mean, he's much better at asking fantastic questions that really keep us coming back, begging for more, than he is about answering them.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, we've got all kinds of questions that still are kind of like, really? That's the answer you went with? Or, we just didn't get one at all or whatever. But I can't deny the guy knows how to ask questions. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care. I just want this one now. I'm focused on that question. I don't care what you did previously.
Well, all things being intact going forward, we mentioned other bits of the news, obviously, that Will Smith in his current film project with Ryan Gosling of all freaking people. He has been confirmed to be back for Our Doctor for Series 8. We still have his companion in the form of General Louise Coleman. And no other principal cast members have been given the nod, nor do we know any of the writers who have been asked to start penning anything for the next series. Although I would imagine that, being true to form, especially in light of everything that is now a buzz, that Steemo will take the first episode, if not first and last, and bookend the series as he often does.
Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of his way of making sure that he's got, you know, the story going through or whatever. He's like, you know, I'm going to start it and I'm going to finish it. That way I know where all the answers and questions and everything come from. But that's kind of where this part of the series fell apart, though. So I'm hoping he does a little bit more than just that.
Yeah. Do a little ghostwriting, you know, with whoever it is that he hands the pen to, just to make sure that whatever involvement of the overlaying arc has a little bit more poignancy in the in-between episodes. You know, you can have your canned episodes, but give us something that just tells us we're still on a path.
So like we said, you know, the fans actually did keep things quiet, and Stephen Moffat actually came out and wrote a thank you to the fans and did come through with the David Tennant and Matt Smith clip. It's not from an episode. It was actually an interview between the two of them, but it's still fun watching and seeing the interaction between the two of them. And just seeing this like minute and a half clip, I'm like, oh, I'm going to love the 50th. These guys look like they have so much fun together, and it's going to be great seeing them on screen in character. And
Any other news that we were able to pull up over the last couple of days, other than just theories and speculations and pot shots and crack theories?
No, that's about it. I mean, it was just everyone talking about how awesome this was and what, you know, the introduction of John Hurt means, and, you know, everyone's still just kind of reeling at this point.
Yeah, very much so. Let it be noted that there was no involvement nor explanation of the transtemporal screwdriver that I picked up. So I think that was just a nice toy that they handed out. So I got myself a nice toy to add to my collection.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Continue to ponder, because I am definitely not alone in the diminished role of the TARDIS and the increased role of the sonic screwdriver as a magic wand going forward, because apparently there is quite a groundswell in that discussion going on right now. I am not in the minority in the least about that. And that's something that we might actually be able to devote as much as an entire episode to and talk WHO tech over the break here.
Yeah, and I mean, we still have a good number of questions that, you know, we haven't gotten answers to that are clearly going to be talked about later. You know, like Shooter wrote in, he brought it up. You know, we still don't know where Clara got the doctor's number from. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think that that's the kind of thing that they're just going to let slide. We're going to find that out. And I still hold to my theory that it was Rose.
I think now that it's another iteration of Clara.
Okay.
Possibly.
Doing a sort of a leapfrog, seeding information, leaving breadcrumbs for herself along the way.
Yeah, because how does she know in every life to save the doctor?
Well, she doesn't. It's something that sort of this
it's just kind of
natural pull. Yeah, they just get drawn, which is why they accept each other so quickly. In each instance, even when they don't get along, they still end up together.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So.
Could be. The Rose theory has credibility, though. It could have been something that we get in the 50th, since we know that they're going to be, you know, rubbing elbows.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens, but we've got a lot of time to mull it over and think about it, so.
Share your crackpot theories with us.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, there's as many Whovians as there are, there's got to be just as many, if not more, theories. So, I want to hear them all.
Yeah, exactly. Bring back the blinky light bulb theory. I want to see whatever happened with that.
Oh, jeez. I'm sure somebody could tie that together, too.
Yeah, why
not? That would be great.
Sure, sure.
All right. Get to work on it. We want that for next week. Come on.
Weekend.
There's a deadline.
We will be, when we do reconvene, we will end up obviously doing our recap of Series 7 in general. And we're not just talking the latter half. We're going to be going back from Asylum of Daleks forward. And one of the things in particular that I'm going to want to take a look at is actually the tone of each episode. I know we were talking about, 7B, if we resequence it so that it, it leads up to a more, dramatic finale sort of thing. I also want to look at what some of the, if you were to take away the, the three-word theme of each episode, the idea of Asylum of Daleks really represents blah, 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 or Town Called Mercy represents blah, 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 and see whether there is some connection to all that as far as what Steamboat might have had in mind when he was handing these slots out to the various writers and saying, these are the kind of things that I want the Doctor to have to deal with over the course of this series. Whether they're interconnected or whether they just happen to be, deal with this week, and so on. I want him to go through this journey. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things that I'm going to do as part of my homework for the next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, all right. Well, I think that's about it for this week. Mm-hmm. We could drag this out for another 2 hours easily. We barely even talked about things that actually happened in the episode. So, but continue the discussion on the comments on this episode. We always read those and usually respond to them as well. Get a conversation going on there about the stuff that we didn't have time to mention this week. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio, on our Facebook page, on the iTunes comments. We love getting those.
Mm-hmm.
Just anywhere that you can get us feedback. Let us know what you loved about this episode, or if you're like one of the 0.12% of people that didn't like it, then we'll laugh at you and call you stupid.
So. Yeah, but we'll do it fluently and with lots of supporting detail.
Yeah, absolutely.
And love and kindness, and we won't hurt you at all. Really, right to us.
All right, so this has been episode 38 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, those little Daleks.
And this is Melissa saying, that was the sound of my brain exploding.
And this is Kier saying, are you there, Steemo? It's me, Kier. I just wanted to say thank you.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Alan.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something you need to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio, on Stitcher Smart Radio under Gallifrey Public Radio. Find us on iTunes, where you can leave us comments and reviews. You can also head over to our homepage at gallifreypublicradio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the things that we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.
Whispermen, the Whispermen are near. If you hear the Whispermen, then turn away your ear.